In Daniel 11:5, we are breaking into the middle of an episode which began in Daniel 10:1. For us to understand what's happening, we need to go back and remind ourselves of some things we saw in our previous message in Daniel. First of all, we see that God is in control of everything which happens in the entire creation. He either directs it or he permits it, but he never loses control of it. Secondly, we know this, that God knows what he's doing. He has no need for input from advisors or investors or advice from us. It seems that we really do like to give God our advice for what he ought to do. But we should really save our breath. Starting in Daniel 10:1, we read, in the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia. Now this would be in 536 BC. A thing, meaning a message, was revealed unto Daniel, whose name was called Belteshazzar. And the thing, that is, the message, was true, but the time appointed was long, and he understood the thing and had understanding of the vision. The vision indicated that the Lord would not, that Israel would not experience peace for long. Instead, God has revealed that Israel would experience much warfare. And we, of course, have seen that in our own lifetimes. Daniel 10:2 says, in those days, I, Daniel, was mourning 3 full weeks. Of course, that's 21 days. Verse 3, I, Daniel, ate no pleasant bread. I ate no pleasant food or no tasty food. Neither came flesh nor wine in my mouth. Neither did I. Again, neither did Daniel anoint myself at all. Means I did not use any ointment at all. I put no lotion on my skin till 3 whole weeks were fulfilled. And in the 24th day of the first month, as I was by the side of the great river, that is by the bank of the great river, which is Hiddekel. This is the Tigris River. Then I lifted up mine eyes and looked, and behold, there was a certain man clothed in linen whose loins were girded with fine gold of Uphaz. It means with a belt of gold from Uphaz around his waist. Now, this man clothed in linen was an angel, as we recall. His body also was like the beryl, meaning like the precious stone or the semi-precious gem. And his face has the appearance of lightning. It means his face was very bright. And his eyes as lamps of fire. His eyes were like flaming torches. And his arms and his feet were like in color to polished brass, meaning to smoothed and polished bronze or to burnished bronze, which would be brilliant, radiant, alluding to purity and strength. And the voice of his words was like the voice of a multitude, which suggests that it was very loud and very powerful. Verse 7, and I, Daniel, saw the vision, for the men that were with me saw not the vision, but a great quaking, meaning a great terror or dread or trembling or shaking fell upon the men who were with Daniel, and they ran away or they fled to hide themselves. Therefore I, Daniel, was left alone and saw this great vision, and there remained no strength in me, for my comeliness was turned in me into corruption. And it means my natural color turned deathly pale. And I, speaking of Daniel, retained no strength. Verse 9, yet heard I, speaking of Daniel, the voice of his words. I heard the voice of the angel's words. And when I heard the voice of his words, when I heard the voice of the angel's words, then was I, meaning Daniel, in a deep sleep. I fell into a deep sleep on my face and or with my face toward the ground. Verse 10, and behold, an hand touched me, which set me upon my knees and upon the palms of my hands. A hand touched me, which made me tremble on my knees and on the palms of my hands. And he said unto me, that's the angel saying to Daniel, O Daniel, a man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak unto thee, and stand upright. For unto thee am I now sent. And when he, meaning when the angel had spoken this word unto me, I stood trembling. Then said he, meaning the angel, said unto me, fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that thou didst set thine heart to understand and to chasten thyself, meaning to humble yourself before thy God, thy words were heard, and I am come for, or I am come because of, or I have come in response to thy words. Daniel's prayer was heard on the first day of this 3-week period. Can you imagine that? The prayer was heard, but it's not answered quite yet. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me, or resisted me, or put himself against me 21 days. But lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, and I, meaning the angel, remained there. I had been left alone there with the kings of Persia. The answer to Daniel's prayer was delayed because of angelic warfare. The prince of the kingdom of Persia was a supernatural creature, meaning a fallen angel, who tried to direct the human rulers of Persia to oppose God's plan. Evil angels seek to influence the affairs of nations, and this is still going on in the world today. But these evil angels will not prevail against God. Michael, whose name means who is like God, is the special guardian of the affairs of Israel and is designated the archangel. I, speaking of this good angel, remained there with the kings of Persia. This good angel, with Michael's help, was left in a place of preeminence in influencing Persia. But the battle between good and evil angels over the control of the nations continues. It's still going on today. Verse 14, now I, meaning the angel, am come to make thee, that is to make you, Daniel, understand what shall befall, meaning what will happen to thy people. What will happen to your people, Daniel, your people being the Jews in the latter days. For yet the vision is for many days. The latter days refers to the future of Israel, culminating in the events surrounding the second coming of Christ. It is important that you and I understand that it is not referring to churches in the church age, meaning it's not referring to the present time, the period of time between the ascension of Christ in Acts 1 and the rapture. That's when we're living. It skips over the period of time known as the church age. One difference between an amillennialist and a premillennialist is that the premillennialist believes that prophecy is to be fulfilled literally. We are premillennialists, whereas the amillennialist does not. So when the Bible talks about a 1,000 year of reign of Christ on the earth after the second coming of Christ to the earth, we as premillennialists believe that there will be an actual reign of Christ on the earth and that it will last for 1,000 years. By contrast, the amillennialist does not believe in a literal 1,000 year reign of Christ. Instead, he believes that the millennium is being fulfilled before Christ's return, and that Satan is currently bound. Well, you know, and I know, if he's bound, he certainly seems to have a very, very long chain, because he gets around. In reality, Satan is not bound today. In Daniel 11, a remarkable section of detailed prophecy is found, and it starts with four Persian kings in verse 2, and then includes Alexander the Great, followed by the Ptolemies and Seleucids until the time of Antiochus Epiphanes in verses 5 through 20. And then includes Antiochus Epiphanes himself in verses 21 through 35. Now, we've already looked at the four Persian kings in verse 2, and we've already looked at Alexander the Great in verses 3 through 4, and tonight we're going to be looking at the Ptolemies and Seleucids until the time of Antiochus Epiphanes in verses 5 through 20. And then, Lord willing, next week, we'll be looking at Antiochus Epiphanes himself in verses 21 through 35. So that's the plan. All the details of these predictions have been literally fulfilled. The literal fulfillment of prophecy, which has already been fulfilled in the past, provides a pattern for the literal fulfillment of prophecy, which has not yet been fulfilled. And it indicates that it will likewise be literally filled. That's why we believe it to be literal. This is the clue to understanding not only the rest of chapter 11 as well as chapter 12, but also to understanding that the book of Revelation, which we will begin to study in our evening services in a few weeks, will likewise be literally fulfilled. Even some evangelicals who claim to believe in the literal interpretation of Scripture do not believe that the literal interpretation of Scripture applies to prophecy. Okay? If they're not pre-tribulation rapturists, they're doing some things with prophecy they should not be doing, such as blending Israel and the church instead of keeping both of them separate and distinct from the other one. In Daniel 11, after a Seleucid king named Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes is predicted in verses 21 through 35. Daniel gives a prophecy about Antichrist, which is yet to be fulfilled in verses 36 to 45. Although the prophecies of chapter 11 were still future at the time Daniel wrote them, verses 1 through 35 have now been fulfilled historically, whereas verses 36 to 45 are still awaiting fulfillment in the future. Remember that this prophecy is being given in 536 BC, in the third year of the reign of Cyrus, king of Persia. Now, the Persian Empire will exist and be in power from 539 when Babylon was conquered, and will exist and be in power until around 333 BC when the Greek Empire will take over. We've already seen Daniel's prophecy concerning Persia in chapter 11, verse 2. Remember, an angel is giving this information to Daniel. And now will I, meaning the angel, show you, Daniel, the truth. Behold, there shall stand up yet three kings in Persia, and the fourth shall be far richer than they all, and by his strength, through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Grecia, meaning against the realm of Greece. Yet three kings in Persia refers to Cambyses, who reigned from 530 to 522 BC, to Pseudo-Smerdis, who reigned from 522 to 521, and to Darius the first Hystaspes, also called Darius the Great, who reigned from 521 to 486 BC. The fourth king of Persia is Xerxes the first, who reigned from 486 to 465 BC, and he's also known as Ahasuerus in the book of Esther. He was opposed to Greece. Daniel's prophecy concerning the Persian Empire has already been literally fulfilled. We've also seen Daniel's prophecy concerning Greece. Daniel 11:3 says, "And a mighty king shall stand up that shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will." A mighty king who shall stand up and who shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will is Alexander the Great. His kingdom was represented by the bronze belly and thighs in Nebuchadnezzar's image and by the winged leopard in Daniel 7:6. Alexander the Great was also the notable horn of the he-goat in Daniel 8:6-8. Verse 4 says, "And when he," meaning the mighty king, Alexander the Great, "shall stand up, his kingdom shall be broken and shall be divided toward the four winds of heaven, and not to his posterity, nor according to his dominion which he ruled. For his kingdom shall be plucked up even for others beside those." In just a few years, he conquered the Persian Empire all the way from Greece to India. Alexander died at age 32 from malaria and complications of alcoholism. After Alexander's death, his kingdom was divided among four of his generals. These four generals represent the four heads of the leopard in 7:6 and the four notable horns on the he-goat in 8:8. A man by the name of Cassander ruled over Macedonia, that's northern Greece, and Greece. Lysimachus ruled over Thrace and portions of Asia Minor. Now, Thrace is the landmass above the Aegean Sea, and it connects Macedonia with present-day Turkey, where Asia Minor would be located. But neither of these two divisions of the Greek Empire is under consideration in this chapter of Daniel. Ptolemy, the P is silent when you pronounce it. If you don't keep it silent, it'll sound funny. Ptolemy and his descendants ruled over Egypt, whereas Seleucus and his descendants ruled over Syria and Mesopotamia. Mesopotamia is the region between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, and it's basically modern Iraq. Daniel's prophecy concerning the Greek Empire has been literally fulfilled. We continue our study of Daniel's vision, where we see Daniel's prophecy concerning Egypt and Syria, concerning the Ptolemies and the Seleucids, and this goes on in verses 5 through 20. Verses 5 through 35 describe the ongoing warfare between the kings of the south, the Ptolemies, and the kings of the north, the Seleucids, which lasted about 200 years following the death of Alexander the Great. As they fought with each other, guess who was in the middle between the two countries? Israel was in the middle. To get from Egypt to Syria, or from Syria to Egypt, the armies would go through Palestine, and this would affect the Jewish people. On the last page of these notes, I have printed a chart of the Ptolemies and the Seleucids for you who are in our service. And I will be relating information that includes these men. And I have adapted much of what I'm saying from a book called The Bible Knowledge Commentary, Old Testament, and also John Walvoord's commentary on Daniel, The Key to Prophetic Revelation. Verse 5 describes the warfare between Ptolemy the First Soter of Egypt. Soter means savior. Nicator means conqueror. And Seleucus the First Nicator of Syria. They like to put these fancy terms on their names. So let's see, I'm not sure what we would call anybody like Danny the First Mince, but we'll have to come up with a name for him, and then we'll know a little bit more about what describes him. Verse 5 says, and the king of the south, every time it's talking about south, it's talking about the Egyptian king, shall be strong, and one of his princes, and he shall be strong above him, and have dominion, and his dominion shall be a great dominion. Now, what's he talking about here? The king of the south is the king of Egypt, and it refers to Ptolemy the First Soter, a general who served under Alexander the Great, shall be strong. And one of his, meaning one of Alexander the Great's princes, Seleucus the First Nicator, the king of Syria, another general who served under Alexander, and he, meaning Seleucus the First Nicator, shall be strong above him. He, Seleucus the First Nicator, will be stronger than Ptolemy the First Soter and have dominion. And his dominion shall be a great dominion. Seleucus the First Nicator's, the king of Syria's dominion, would be greater, excuse me, than Ptolemy the First Soter's dominion, and would eventually stretch from Palestine to India. Daniel's prophecy in verse 5 has been literally fulfilled. Verse 6 describes the warfare between Ptolemy the Second Philadelphus of Egypt and Antiochus the Second Theos of Syria. Philadelphus, you know, brotherly love. Theos is the name for God. Verse 6 of chapter 11. And in the end of years, they shall join themselves together. For the king's daughter of the south, that would be Egypt, shall come to the king of the north, that would be Syria, to make an agreement. But she shall not retain the power of the arm, whatever that means, we'll talk about it in a minute. Neither shall he stand, nor his arm, but she shall be given up, and they that brought her, and he that begat her, and he that strengthened her in these times. And if you got all that figured out, you're doing very well. But in case you didn't get it all, let me help you with it. And in the end of years, they means after a lapse of several years. Ptolemy the second, Philadelphus, king of Egypt, son of Ptolemy the first, and Antiochus the second, Theos, king of Syria, grandson of Seleucus the first, shall join themselves together, and it means they'll enter an alliance. For the king's daughter of the south, her name was Bernice, daughter of Ptolemy the second, Philadelphus, shall come to the king of the north, shall come to Antiochus the second, Theos, to make an agreement, to make an alliance sealed by the marriage of Bernice, Ptolemy the second, Philadelphus' daughter, to Antiochus the second, Theos. But in order to facilitate this marriage, Ptolemy the second, Philadelphus, demanded that Antiochus the second, Theos, divorce his wife Laodice. You can see where that's going to go. But she shall not retain the power of the arm. It means, but Bernice will not retain the power of her authority. Neither shall he stand, nor his arm. And it means that neither will Ptolemy the second, Philadelphus, or his authority endure. He will not retain his power for long. But she, meaning Bernice, shall be given up, and they that brought her, those that brought Bernice, will be handed over along with her royal escort that brought her, and he that begat her, along with her father, Ptolemy the second, Philadelphus. And he that strengthened her in these times is Antiochus the second, Theos, the one who obtained her in marriage. What's going on? Ptolemy the second, Philadelphus, king of Egypt, gave his daughter Bernice in marriage to Antiochus the second, Theos, king of Syria, but the marriage did not last, because Laodice, whom Antiochus the second, Theos, had divorced in order to marry Bernice, had Bernice killed. Then Laodice, the wife whom Antiochus the second, Theos, divorced in order to marry Bernice, poisoned Antiochus the second, Theos, and made her son, Seleucus the second, Callinicus, king of Syria. Daniel's prophecy in verse 6 has been literally fulfilled. Well, this didn't sit well with Bernice's brother. And verses 7 through 9 describe Bernice's brother, Ptolemy the third, Euergetes, doer of good works, invading Syria and defeating the Syrian army. But out of a branch of her roots shall one stand up in his estate, which shall come with an army and shall enter into the fortress of the king of the north and shall deal against them and shall prevail. But out of a branch of her roots shall one stand up in his estate. It means that Bernice's brother, Ptolemy the third, Euergetes, succeeded his father, Ptolemy the second, Philadelphus, and set out to avenge the death of his sister Bernice, which, or who, referring to Ptolemy the third, Euergetes, shall come with an army and shall enter into the fortress, shall enter into the stronghold of the king of the north, meaning of the king of Syria, and shall deal against them, shall fight against and or shall take action against the Syrians and shall prevail. Ptolemy the third, Euergetes, invaded Syria in 246 BC and defeated the Syrian army and put Laodice to death. Verse 8. And shall also carry captives into Egypt their gods, with their princes, and with their precious vessels of silver and gold, and he shall continue more years than the king of the north. And shall also carry captives into Egypt their gods. It means, and shall carry the Syrians' gods into Egypt as captives, with their princes and with their precious vessels of silver and of gold. And he shall continue more years than the king of the north. He shall reign longer than the king of Syria. Ptolemy the third, Euergetes, returned to Egypt with many spoils and reigned longer than Seleucus the second, Callinicus, the king of Syria. Verse 9. So the king of the south shall come into his kingdom and return into his own land. So the king of the south, Ptolemy the third, Euergetes, shall come into his, meaning into the king of Syria's kingdom, and shall return into his own land, means he's going to go back into Egypt. Daniel's prophecy regarding verses 7 through 9 has been literally fulfilled. Now, verses 10 through 20 describe the seesaw struggles between the Seleucids and the Ptolemies between 223 and 200 BC. You see how late these dates are becoming? The liberals do not believe in prophecy being given in advance. They believe, therefore, that whoever wrote Daniel had to be alive after you get to Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes in the second century BC. And therefore, they want you to believe, but we don't believe it. They want you to believe that Daniel is not the real author of the book called Daniel. They want you to believe that some other writer wrote it historically after these things happened, but wrote it as if it were prophetic in advance. But the Bible is clear that Daniel is the writer, and it was all written in advance of these things happening. Verse 10. But his sons shall be stirred up and shall assemble a great multitude of great, forces, and one shall certainly come and overflow and pass through. Then shall he return and be stirred up even to his fortress. But his, which refers to Seleucus, the second Callinicus's, or king of Syria's sons. They would be Seleucus the third, Soter, and Antiochus the third, the great, shall be stirred up and shall assemble a multitude of great forces, and one shall certainly come. This would be Seleucus the third, Soter, invaded Asia Minor, but Antiochus the third, the great, attacked Egypt and overflow like a flood caused by a river overflowing its banks, and it means shall overwhelm and pass through. Then shall he, meaning Antiochus the third, the great, return to Syria and be stirred up. He will again stir up strife, even to his, meaning to Ptolemy the fourth, Philopater's fortress or stronghold, indicating that Antiochus the third, the great, will again invade Egypt. Verse 11, and the king of the south shall be moved with choler and shall come forth and fight with him, even with the king of the north, and he shall set forth a great multitude, but the multitude shall be given into his hand. The king of the south, meaning the king of Egypt, Ptolemy the fourth, Philopater, shall be moved with choler, that means shall be moved with anger, and shall come forth and fight with him, meaning fight with Antiochus the third, the great, even with the king of the north, meaning the king of Syria. And he, Antiochus the third, the great, shall set forth a great multitude. He will raise or muster a large army, but the multitude shall be given into his, meaning into Ptolemy the fourth, Philopater's hand. It means that the large army of Antiochus the third, the great, will be defeated by the Egyptian army of Ptolemy the fourth, Philopater. And when he hath taken away the multitude, in verse 12, his heart shall be lifted up, and he shall cast down many ten thousands, but he shall not be strengthened by it. When he, referring to Ptolemy the fourth Philopater, hath taken away the multitude, his heart shall be lifted up. It means he'll be lifted up with pride. And he, Ptolemy the fourth Philopater, shall cast down many thousands. Ptolemy the fourth Philopater slaughtered many thousands, but he shall not be strengthened by it. It means, but he will not continue to prevail. His success will be short-lived. You know, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, south against north, north against south, back and forth for 200 years. For the king of the north shall return and shall set forth a multitude greater than the former, and shall certainly come after certain years with a great army and with much riches. For the king of the north, Antiochus the third, the great, shall return and shall set forth a multitude greater than the former. This time he will return with a much larger army, and shall certainly come after certain years with a great army and with much riches, meaning with much equipment. Verse 14, and in those times there shall many stand up against the king of the south. Also the robbers of thy people shall exalt themselves to establish the vision, but they shall fall. And in those times, there shall many stand up against the king of the south, meaning stand up against the king of Egypt. Philip, the fifth of Macedon, joined with Antiochus the third, the great king of Syria, against Egypt. Many Jews also joined Antiochus the third, the great, against Egypt. Also the robbers of thy people, meaning violent men among your people, among Daniel's people, the Jews, shall exalt themselves to establish the vision, meaning to fulfill their vision. But they shall fall. They will fail. They will not have success. As you go into verses 15 through 20, Antiochus the third, the great, the king of Syria, defeated the Egyptian army in Sidon. He came to terms with Ptolemy the fifth Epiphanes, king of Egypt, and gave him his daughter in marriage. He annexed the coastlands of Asia Minor, that's western Turkey, and unsuccessfully tried to invade Greece. He was defeated by the Romans at Magnesia in 190 BC and was forced to pay tribute and soon died. He was succeeded by his son Seleucus the fourth Philopater as king of Syria, who heavily taxed the people of Israel. All right, back to verse 15. So the king of the north shall come and cast up a mount and take the most fenced cities, and the arms of the south shall not withstand, neither his chosen people, neither shall there be any strength to withstand. So the king of the north, this is Antiochus the third, the great, the king of Syria, shall come and cast up a mount. It means he'll build a siege mound and take the most fenced, meaning the most fortified cities, and the arms, meaning the forces of the south, meaning the forces of Egypt, shall not withstand. Will not withstand Antiochus the third, the great, the king of the north, neither his chosen people, neither shall there be any strength to withstand. Not even Ptolemy the fourth Philopater's choice troops will have strength to withstand him, meaning to withstand Antiochus the third, the great, the king of the north. But he that cometh against him shall do according to his own will, and none shall stand before him. And he shall stand in the glorious land by which his hand shall be consumed. But he that cometh, Antiochus the third, the great, the king of Syria, against him, against Ptolemy the fourth Philopater, the king of Egypt, shall do according to his own will. Means he'll do as he pleases. And none shall stand before him. And he shall stand in the glorious land, meaning in Palestine, which by his hand shall be consumed. which he will have power to destroy. Israel's overrun and overrun and overrun. Verse 17, he shall also set his face to enter with the strength of his whole kingdom and upright ones with him. Thus shall he do, and he shall give him the daughter of women corrupting her. But she shall not stand on his side, neither before him. He, meaning Antiochus III, the great, the king of Syria, shall also set his face. It means he will also determine to enter with the strength of his whole kingdom and upright ones with him. The thought is that Antiochus III, the great, the king of Syria, will make an alliance with Ptolemy V Epiphanes, the king of Egypt, and thus shall he do. And he, meaning Antiochus III, the great, the king of Syria, shall give him, will give Ptolemy V Epiphanes, king of Egypt, the daughter of women. She happened to be Cleopatra, but she's not the famous Cleopatra queen in Egypt. Corrupting her. Now, it does not mean corrupting his daughter. It means in order to ruin or to destroy her, in order to ruin or to destroy the kingdom from within, not in order to ruin or to destroy Cleopatra. But she, Cleopatra, shall not stand on his side. She will not stand on Antiochus III, the great's side, neither before him. Neither will she be for Antiochus III, the great. Instead, Cleopatra defected and stood with Egypt, whose king was Ptolemy V Epiphanes, against Syria, whose king was Antiochus III, the great, the very one who gave her to Ptolemy V Epiphanes. After this, shall he turn his face unto the isles, and shall take many. But a prince for his own behalf shall cause the reproach offered by him to cease. Without his own reproach, he shall cause it to turn upon him. And this shall be, shall Antiochus III, the great, the king of Syria, turn his face or turn his attention unto the isles, unto the coastlands or islands, eventually to Asia Minor and Greece, and shall take, meaning shall capture many, but a prince for his own behalf, a Roman by the name of Cornelius Scipio, shall cause the reproach offered by him, shall cause the reproach against them by Antiochus III, the great, the king of Syria, to cease. Cornelius Scipio will put an end to the insolence of Antiochus III, the great, the king of Syria, by putting his insolence back upon Antiochus III, the great, the king of Syria. Without his own reproach, shall he cause it to turn upon him. He, meaning Cornelius Scipio, will repay him, meaning Antiochus III, the great, for his scorn. Or he, Cornelius Scipio, will turn his, meaning Antiochus III, the great's insolence back on him. When Antiochus III, the great, attempted to conquer Greece, he was defeated by the Romans at Thermopylae and Magnesia and returned to Syria to die in an insurrection. Verse 19, then he shall turn his face toward the fort of his own land, but he shall stumble and fall and not be found. Then he, Antiochus III, the great, the king of Syria, shall turn his face toward the fort, meaning toward the fortress of his own land. It suggests that he will take refuge in his own fortresses. But he, Antiochus III, the great, the king of Syria, shall stumble and fall and not be found again. Verse 20. Then shall stand up in his estate a raiser of taxes in the glory of the kingdom. But within a few days he shall be destroyed, neither in anger nor in battle. Then shall stand up in his, meaning in Antiochus III, the great's estate, meaning in his place, a raiser of taxes in or for the glory of the kingdom, meaning for the glory of Syria. Seleucus, the fourth Philopater, was famous for his oppressive taxes on Israel. But within a few days, he shall be destroyed neither in anger nor in battle. What happened? He was poisoned by his treasurer, Heliodorus. What a tangled situation. Daniel's prophecy in verses 10 through 20 has been literally fulfilled. We've seen in this message that prophecy is to be interpreted literally. We need to remember this as we complete our study of Daniel and as we move on to a study of Revelation. And that's as far as we're going to go tonight. I hope you're not characterized by battle fatigue at this point in time.